How do you transcend the modes of nature, Krishna Kumar? Perfect answer. Rama, what's the line? What's the line, Rama? The line is Bhakti Yogena Sevate. But what kind of Bhakti Yoga? Vyabhicharini. No stop. Nirantara. Continuous. Yes, Krishna Kumar? It doesn't matter, because that is the only answer to that question. That's for that question, that's the only answer. Okay, I'm a very strict teacher. You have to give me the, not to the, no. I want the answer. Not something, no. Give me the exact answer. All right, can we do the synonyms now? My school is in session. Sit properly. What do you think, Rohan? You like my school? Okay. All right. Buddhya, with the intelligence. Vishuddhaya, fully purified. Yukta, engaged. Dritya, by determination. Atmanam, the self. Niyamya, regulating. Cha, also. Shabda adin, such as sound. Vishayan, the sense objects. Okay, now, how many sense objects are there? How many knowledge-acquiring senses do you have? Five. Therefore, how many sense objects are there? Five. Because there's a corresponding sense object with those five knowledge-acquiring senses. So what's one of the knowledge-acquiring senses? Ears. And therefore, the corresponding object is sound. Hey, you're on fire today. I like this. All right, what's another? That's the first knowledge-acquiring sense. What's the next one? Yeah, or you can say the tongue. Okay, tongue. Now, what does the tongue want? What object is it looking for? Taste! You are really making me happy today. Taste. What's the next knowledge acquiring sense? Smell. What does smell, smell, that's the answer. Because actually it's the nose, but it's looking for what? Odor or smell, right? When we go by the garbage bin, but when we go by nice rose garden, or like for me, when I go by eucalyptus, I love eucalyptus, that's a nice smell, eucalyptus. Or in Hawaii, when I went, the place where I stayed, it had all these plumerias, there was plumeria trees, and my wife would pick the fallen plumerias and put them in the room in water, and the whole cabin was filled with this nice plumeria smell. So we did three senses. We need two more. What's the next one? Eyes. What do the eyes want? They want color. If the world was black and white, it'd be very dull. The eyes like color. It's only by color that you can distinguish form. Okay? Unless there's colors, then everything is just one, like darkness. There's no color, right? Darkness means the absence of color or light. So you can't distinguish anything. But as soon as there's light, color, now you can distinguish different forms. This is all explained in the third canto of Bhagavatam by Kapiladeva. This is what he talks about. And what's the last knowledge acquiring sense? Touch. And what is the touch looking for? To feel nice things, right? By touching, you can learn a lot about an object, right? Everything has its particular touch to it, whether it be an animal, right? Like, why do people, Karmi people, like dogs, right? They like to... Or when I was in Australia, I was rubbing the neck of the calf, okay? Because that's what the calf likes. Scratch it, scratch it, scratch it. So I liked touching the calf. It was nice. So all of the senses have a corresponding sense object. Very good. For those of you who came late, we are in chapter 18, the synonyms for text 51 through 53. Please come in. There are no demerits in my school. Very good. Excellent. Glad you could make it. Thank you, Hiran. I hear that it was you who was pushing to come here tonight. But where's your brother? Ah, Jai. Okay. Yes, when you play cricket, you become a pure cricket devotee. Rain, shine, snow, sleep, you play. Okay, we're in the word for words. Chakva, giving up. Raga, attachment. Dveshao, hatred. So these two things go together. Raga, dveshao. Attachment and hatred. Like and dislike. Those are functions of the mind. Right? And it can change. One minute you like something, and then, I don't like it anymore. Okay? So this attachment, hatred, they go hand in hand. Next word. Yudasya. Laying aside. Cha, also. Vivittasevi. Living in a secluded place. Yes, if you're going to actually practice yoga the way it is outlined in the Bhagavatam or Gita, you don't go to downtown Manhattan on 42nd Street and tried to do meditation. That's, you're defeating the whole purpose. Sankirtan you can do, that's different. But if you're going to do the actual yoga that we read about in 6th chapter, or the kind of yoga, again, that's described by Kapila in 3rd canto, and which you read about so many times in Ramayana and Mahabharata, where were the sages doing meditation? Forest. In a secluded place, because in order for that to do that, you no distractions, not in the, you know, wherever the horns are harking and the elephants and the car. No, you want calm, tranquil place. Let's continue. Lagu ashi, eating a small quantity. So here's the difference between devotees and yogis. Yogis, that's what they have to do. Because if you've eaten a big meal, try doing meditation. The only thing you're meditating on is your stomach. And that hoping, can I go to the bathroom? Okay? Yes, instead of om, you're... what kind of om is coming out? But if you're a devotee, that's different. You can eat a big meal of Mahaprasad, because when you're a devotee, you are actively engaged. A devotee, a bhakti yogi, is different from a other kind of yogi, because the bhakti yogi is engaged. gets up early, takes care of the deities. Just like today, I had to went to the program in the morning, then I came here, it's raining, I set up all the equipment. Usually by the time I start the program, I'm tired already. All right? So because there's a lot of energy in devotional service, the pujaris in the temple, you know, they have to, we could ask Nimai Charan, there's a lot of preparation work before the arti goes on and when they offer the bhog. It's work, but that's in devotional service in bhakti yogi. So you're allowed to eat sumptuous prasadam because you need energy. Okay, let's continue. Yata, having controlled. Vak, speech. Kaya, body. Manasa, and mind. Dhyana yoga para, absorbed in trance. Nityam, 24 hours a day. So that's another thing. If you're a real yogi, it's not just on Sundays. It's every day, all day. Like, take for example, Parikshit. He spent that last 7 days, no eating, no sleeping. He was trying to get to the stage of trance. Okay, by the help of Shukadeva Goswami. Or Vishvamitra. Vishvamitra was performing austerities for 60,000 years. Not that, okay, I'll go to church one, like most people, they go to church or temple or mosque one day of the week. But real bhaktas, they go every day, or you have temples in your home. Meenakshi, you don't worship your deity just on Sunday, do you? No, every day, right? And Mausi too, you're taking care of the deities every day. Yeah, every morning. Okay, let's continue. Vairagyam, detachment. Now, I have explained this word 1,000 times. Who can give me the two sides of the coin of detachment, as explained by Nirantara Das? The two sides of detachment. Yes, Arjuna? Wait. It's Arjuna. Get in the microphone and speak.
Chastity.
Huh?
Chastity.
No, that's not deep. No. Wrong question. Who knows the answer? There's two sides of the coin of detachment. Nimai Charan? Huh? That's not how I've explained it 100 times. That's not what I've explained. There's two sides to detachment. Nobody knows? Ah, you get the gold star today. Somebody listens to my lectures. Now you're my ace student. Very good. If you just have detachment from material sense gratification, you're called what? Impersonalist. But once you add attachment to Krishna, now you have become a devotee. Both have to be there. And you can't be a devotee lusting after material sense gratification. That's not a good qualification. So a devotee also wants to become detached from material sense gratification. But, okay, now my next question. If you're simply, listen carefully now, please put on your transcendental thinking caps. Okay? If you're just detached from material sense gratification, but not attached to Krishna, what might happen? Yes, exactly. Because it becomes artificial. Because unless you have attachment to Krishna, that detachment just means no, 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 no. Just like you all know with your children. You can't just say no, 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 no. You have to give them something. Otherwise, they're going to go nuts on you. So you may say, no, you can't do this, but you can do this. And that's the beauty of bhakti yoga. And that's why we have this phrase, yukta vairagyam, feasible detachment. Again, with the food, we say no meat, no fish, no eggs, but prasadam. Trust me, if this movement was you can't eat, I would not have lasted 1 second. Right? So, Prabhupada was telling us, yes, you give up this meat, fish, eggs, onions, garlic, but replace it with ghee. Mahaprasade golden day. Yes, nice rice, dal. Oh, I'm getting hungry. Sabji. Halva. That was the first, halva was one of the first things I learned how to cook. When I had halva, I said, I got to learn how to cook that. So the devotees show, oh, it's real easy. And I would make that every day. How do you think I got so fat? So yes, that's the whole same way. Especially in my case. You're not allowed to do mundane music, but we have devotional music. We have kirtan. So in the bhakti yoga process, there are no's, there are many no's, but at the same time, there's things to replace it. As we learned in chapter 2, parang drishtva nivartate. What does that mean, Meenakshi? You don't know? Come on. Rama? That's not what parang drishtva nivartate means. No. You guys have not studied. Parang drishtva nivartate means you get a higher taste. There's a lower taste. Right? Gross material sense credit. That's a lower taste. But Krishna consciousness replaces that lower taste with something better. That's the meaning of parang drishtva nivartate. Otherwise, okay, the early disciples of Prabhupada were all who? What kind of people were they? The first hippies. What are hippies known for? Drugs. So how did Prabhupada preach? Right? How did Prabhupada preach to those first people? I'm going to give you something better than drugs. It's called Maha Mantra. And because of the way Prabhupada's chanting is so potent, just by hearing Prabhupada chant under the tree, that pure chanting got them. How do you think this movement started? It wasn't that Prabhupada was pulling out ashes and stuff from it. That's not Prabhupada's preaching. Producing gold. Oh, he's the guru because he produced. No. This movement started Prabhupada sitting under a tree with kartals or a little bongo chanting. That's how this movement started. The history is there. The pictures are there. Sitting under a tree in New York City, just chanting. And that sound vibration was so pure, it attracted. So it was not hard for them. And of course, Prabhupada had, in the early days, Prabhupada was cooking. These guys didn't know how to cook in their shorts and beards. What did they know how to cook? So they were getting food cooked by a pure devotee. Okay? Fortunate is the word. Supreme fortune. Yeah, you could say lucky. Yeah. I guess being in the right place at the right time. And Prabhupada was excellent cook. Expert. And when Prabhupada cooked the Sunday, it was like, wow. And then he trained them. He gave them the recipes, how to make chutney, how to make sabji, how to make rice dal. So this movement started. Prabhupada was baby spoon feeding them in the beginning. That's how this movement started. And it all began Prabhupada sitting under the tree chanting Hare Krishna. I'm glad to see nice people are coming to the party. Very nice. Some I haven't seen in 12 years or more. I'm very happy. I bless you all for coming. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra. Okay, next word, samupasrita. Having taken shelter of ahankaram, false ego. Quiz time. I've explained this word a billion times. Who can give me a good definition, according to Prabhupada, of false ego? Yes. Ah, thank you. You have got a gold star today in the class. Yes, I am this body. Okay, now I'm going to ask, you tell me true or false. A false ego means I am Hindu. True. Thank you. Oh, you failed that one. False ego means I am American. Very good. Okay? Yes. Where does it say in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Hindu? Do we hear that? In the Vedas? It does say what? Aham Brahmasmi. Not Aham Hindasmi. No. Okay. We're not Americans. Okay, here, tell me, true or false? I am man. Is that false ego? You guys doubt? You have not learned your lessons. These should be no-brainers. Yes, didn't you say, I am this body? So what does it mean, I am this body? That means I'm American, Hindu, man, woman, young, old. What's it got to do with the soul, right? Is the soul Hindu? Okay, the sun. Does Donald Trump own the sun? Does the United States own the sun? Who does the sun belong to? Yeah, Krishna, good. As we said earlier, the answer to every question, Krishna Kumar, Bhakti Yoga or Krishna? Exactly. And devote, yeah. Yes. So the sun doesn't belong to anyone. So is Krishna Hindu? No, he's not Hindu. He's God. He's like the sun. All right? Nobody's got a monopoly. Okay? So false ego is anything other than I'm the eternal servant of God. Lord Chaitanya, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, your spirit soul, your part and parcel of? Yes. Krishna says, your part and parcel of me. That's real ego. Anything other than I'm part and parcel of Krishna, that is false ego. Because ego means identification. How do I identify? In the material world, everyone's in false ego, identifying as American, Democrat, Republican, man, woman, Indian. Everybody's identifying. But as we know, and you've heard me say a billion times, right, that astrologer told Swabas, oh yes, you and your wife have been husband and wife 5 times, each time you switch. You understand? The man becomes the woman becomes the man. Unless you surrender to Krishna. Right? And isn't in the Hindu scriptures, You take husband and wife seven times, right? Isn't that part of your thing?
Seven lifetimes.
Seven lifetimes, yeesh. Make sure you get a good husband or wife. You're stuck together for seven times. Fortunately, my wife said to me several years ago, yes, she wants to be with me seven times. I said, oh, that's good. I'm fortunate. I have a good wife. But I know for sure next time it's going to be switched. By your blessings. I hope so. Hare Krishna. Everybody chant. One more time. All right, let's go. I'm having fun tonight. Balam, false strength. Darpam, false pride. Kamam, lust. Krodham, anger. Parigraham, and acceptance of material things. Vimuchya, being delivered from. Nirmama, without a sense of proprietorship. Shanta, peaceful. Brahma Bhuyaya, for self-realization. Kalpate, is qualified. So, this let's go back to parigraham, right? But look at the word parigraham, and acceptance of material things. So who can answer this question? So does that mean as devotees we shouldn't have anything? Is that what that means? No. What does the meaning? Use it for Krishna. And what else? What is that phrase that Prabhupada uses all the time? There's a phrase he uses. You take as much material things you need to keep body and soul together. In other words, one of the causes of fall down from spiritual life is you start to become greedy for more and more material things, more money. So what's happening is you're getting away from spiritual activities and becoming more concerned with, I got to get a bigger car, I got to get a bigger house, I have to do more of this. Right now your emphasis has changed. But when you're in Krishna consciousness, you accept what Krishna gives you as your quota, you're satisfied. It's not that unless I have a big house, then I can't execute Krishna. No. Vyasadeva lives in a little hut. But what did he leave behind us? Vedas, Puranas, Bhagavatam, Vedanta Sutra. So, don't misunderstand. We don't say material things are bad. As Nimai Charan says, you should be able, whatever material things you have, utilize it for serving Krishna. Now, if you have like Yudhisthira, and Parikshit, they were kings, right? They were kings. But at the same time, they were not greedy. And whatever Krishna was giving them, they were utilizing to serve Krishna. Prabhupada followed the same formula. In the beginning, this movement could barely exist. There's a story, one time, the devotees went to Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, I want to do a big festival. How much money is in the bank account? The devotee said, we only have $500. We better not. Prabhupada said, no, spend it. Let's do a big festival. And sure enough, at that festival, donations came in. You see how Prabhupada? And sometimes the devotees would say, Prabhupada, we want to build this big temple. We want to do it. Prabhupada would say, first, Krishna wants to see what you're doing with what you have now before he gives you more. Krishna can give you the world, right? But can you handle it? That depends. So he wants to see, are you? He's already given us, he's given all of us so many things, right? Now you have to ask yourself, of all the things Krishna is giving me, am I utilizing it to its full potential before asking or expecting more? I should utilize everything I have now. Then, before you know it, yes, Krishna will give you more. You follow the idea? All right, let's look at the translation. Please repeat. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance, and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship, and peaceful. Such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. So where it says false strength, false pride, think of Duryodhana. He is the poster child for false pride, false strength. You all know. Kamsa, yes. Yes. But I favor that Duryodhana because he personifies this. All right. Shall we look at the purport? Thank you for your blessings. When one is purified by intelligence, he keeps himself in the mode of goodness. We mentioned this last night. Last night, we had a class on faith. And Krishna was explaining both in the Gita and in Bhagavatam that you can have faith in the mode of goodness, faith in the mode of passion, ignorance, and then there's another kind of faith, transcendental faith. And that transcendental faith is when you have faith in what process? Bhakti Yoga. Come on, Krishna Kumar. Come on. She's beating you to the answer here. Yes. Thus, one becomes the controller of the mind and is always in trance. He is not attached to the objects of sense gratification, and he is free from attachment and hatred in his activities. Such a detached person naturally prefers to live in a secluded place. He does not eat more than what he requires, and he controls the activities of his body and mind. He has no false ego because he does not accept the body as himself. So Prabhupada confirms our previous discussion. He does not accept the body as himself, nor has he a desire to make the body fat and strong by accepting so many material things. Because he has no bodily concept of life, he is not falsely proud. He is satisfied with every... This is what I was saying. Look at this sentence. He is satisfied with everything that is offered to him by the grace of the Lord and is never angry in the absence of sense gratification. Prabhupada would tell us, a brahmana is someone who is satisfied in any condition. Like, what is the best example from Krishna Leela? There was a devotee, yes, Sudama. How poor was Sudama? He has to go to the neighbor to bring rice to see Krishna. That's pretty poor. But was Sudama happy? He was happy. When after seeing Krishna and he comes home and now his little hut has become a palace and his wife is now dressed in nice and he can't even recognize that it's her, did he change? No, he was the same simple Sudama. Nothing changed. That's a real Brahmana. Whether he's in an opulent position or a simple position, he's peaceful and engages in devotional service. Yes, he was peaceful and because he had conquered his senses. Right. Okay. Nor does he endeavor to acquire sense objects. Thus, when he is completely free from false ego, he becomes non-attached to all material things, and that is the stage of self-realization of Brahman. That stage is called the Brahma-Bhuta stage. When one is free from the material conception of life, he becomes peaceful and cannot be agitated. This is described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 70. Let's chant together. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa prabhashanti yadvat tadvat kama yang prabhashanti sarve tam apnoti nakama kami. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Here, desires means desires apart from serving Krishna. The devotee always has a desire to serve Krishna. That's not what we mean. When it says desires, it means material or personal desires for sense gratification. It does not mean that one has no desire to serve Krishna. What do you think Radharani is thinking about all the time? How to serve Krishna better. So are you going to say, oh, Radharani, you're not obedient to Bhagavad Gita. You're not supposed to have any desires. That's what an impersonalist would say to Radharani, and then she would curse him. Get out of here, you fool. Because real desirelessness means I want to serve Krishna. There is a Bengali verse. We have some Bengalis here today. So that's why I want to quote this verse. This is Lord Chaitanya giving his definition of what it means to be desireless. Lord Chaitanya says, Krishna bhakta nishkam atta eva shanta. Forgive me in Bengali, I'm trying the best I can. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. So he compares the two. Krishna bhakta nishkam. You all know what kam means. Nishkam means no material. Kam means material desire. Okay? Doesn't say nishseva. Says nishkama. So because the devotee has no material desire, he speaks atta eva shanta. So if anyone ever asked you, how can I, like that lady, I always tell you the story, that lady in Panama. Swamiji, how can I have peace? Can you give me peace? So my first question was, do you eat meat? She goes, oh, I love meat, huh? No peace for you. Then she asked, I said, okay, do you drink liquor? She goes, yes, I love. I said, no peace for you. Then I said, do you gamble? I said, yeah, I like to play cards. No peace for you. How can you have peace when you're doing those activities that rob you of peace? That's why to become real devotee, those four regulative principles. That's where you become peaceful, when you give up sinful life. If you're not giving up sinful life, don't kid yourself. There's no peace there. If you're running after sex, you're running after all this sense gratification, no, you're not going to be peaceful. Peaceful, peace is within. Nobody can give it to you. Come here, I will give you peace. Come on. No. You have to find that peace. You have to become, like you just said, what is that, the thing you said about Sudama? Jitendriya. There it is. There's peace. Conquer your senses. Then you can have peace. Not otherwise. Not a magic wand. Or, you know, okay, let's go on Google. I think there's a sale on peace. Amazon.com. Oh yeah, peace. Okay. Sorry. Doesn't work that way. It comes from within. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra.